Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show today. Out of the entire Lewis and Clark expedition, only one member ever set foot in Oregon territory again, and he's actually buried here. That would be Pomp, Jean-Baptiste Charbonneau, the baby born to Sacagawea in a birch bark canoe in Fort Mandan, which is now North Dakota. Charbonneau led a life of extremes, even by the standards of his time, which were themselves pretty extreme. Raised and educated in St. Louis, he traveled to Europe to spend 6 years in the court of a German duke. Then he helped the Mormons invade Mexico, and then he became one of the most respected mountain men of the West. He spoke, no one really knows how well, at least half a dozen languages, probably more. A picture of him, or rather a picture of a baby that's supposed to be him, is on the ill-starred golden dollar coin released several years ago. It is the only picture of an infant ever to appear on American money. One of the scenic landmarks of the Rockies, Pompey's Pillar, is named after him. You may have thought it was named after a Roman general. You would have been wrong. It was actually named after this baby. Yet today, nobody has any idea what he looked like. For such a literate fellow, he seems to have written almost nothing beyond official documents. He drifts through early American history like a frontier ghost, and half the stories you'll hear about his life have been made up to fill the more enticing holes in what we actually know. Well, here's what we do know. After returning from the expedition, William Clark kinda adopted the little guy and made sure that he got as close to a first-class education as you could get in early 1800s St. Louis, which actually is better than you might think. This was probably fair, though. Lewis might very well have owed his life to Pomp. The baby served as an irrefutable demonstration of peaceful intentions, with every Native American tribe the Corps of Discovery met on its path west. Without him and his mom in the canoe, it's entirely possible, and actually rather likely, that the entire Lewis and Clark expedition would have been annihilated in a bloody misunderstanding somewhere along the upper Missouri before ever getting anywhere near the West Coast. And, consequently, Oregon would have ended up as a colony of either Spain or England. When Charbonneau was 18 years old, the lad met Duke Paul Wilhelm of Württemberg, who was on a tour of the American wilderness. When the Duke returned to Europe, the lad went with him. Nobody knows for sure if he went as a friend and companion or just as a servant. He may even have been an exotic specimen exhibit. He was, after all, half Native American and already very much a frontiersman. In any case, when the Duke returned 6 years later, so did Charbonneau. During his time in Europe, he'd picked up some Spanish and German to add to the English, French, Shoshone, and Hidatsa that he already had. At that point, though, Charbonneau plunged back into the wilderness. You might think that fresh from a European courthouse options in St. Louis and even back east would have been pretty good. But throughout his life, the men he'd looked up to, his father and Clark, had been frontiersmen who'd won their stripes by going into the wilderness. Plus, he was half Indian. No matter where he went back east, he'd be an outsider. On the frontier, guys like Joe Meek, Jim Bridger, and Kit Carson, they wouldn't judge him by his ethnic background, or if they did, they'd count his Indian heritage as a good thing. That was not the case back east. So westward he went, again. What followed was a life spent trapping beaver, shooting buffalo, exploring, negotiating and fighting with Native Americans, and digging for gold. His skills in Spanish and several Indian languages made Charbonneau a major asset during the Mexican War, and after the hostilities ended, he served for a time as a magistrate in the San Luis Rey Mission near San Diego. When gold was discovered in Northern California in 1848, Charbonneau found himself in perfect position, a local, managing the hotel in the town of Auburn. He spent 16 years working the diggings there. He also apparently fathered a child with a woman named Maria there. His second, actually, the first with a German woman in Württemberg, died in infancy. What happened to Maria is anybody's guess. Beyond a birth record, the mission records are silent about her and her baby about whom we don't even know a name. Eventually, the California gold petered out, and Charbonneau heard of a rich strike in western Montana. So on his way there, he cut across the southwest corner of Oregon. And that's where, after getting soaked crossing the Owyhee River, he got pneumonia or something similar, possibly alkali poisoning, and died. For decades, his gravesite was a mystery too. But in the little high desert community of Jordan Valley, a persistent bit of local folklore held that Charbonneau was buried in one of six modest graves on a local ranch, a grave that was only known for sure to hold a, quote, half-breed Indian. Ranch owner Mike Hanley made it his mission to learn the truth, and with the help of some professional researchers, he got to it. This, quote, half-breed Indian was indeed the inimitable multilingual mountain man himself. Today, that grave is a National Historic Landmark. Its occupant is immortalized with a baby picture that probably looks nothing like him on a coin that's become almost as obscure as the life story of the man himself. History shows us just enough of Jean-Baptiste Charbonneau's story to know that there's a great story there. Unfortunately, it looks like we'll never really know it. All we know for sure is that if it had not been for Mr. Pomp, Oregon would be a totally different place today, and probably even part of an entirely different country. This story was first published on July 25th of 2011 under the headline, Life of Sacagawea's Mountain Man's Son, a Tantalizing Mystery. Key sources included works by Albert Furtwängler, Larry E. Morris, and Ralph Friedman. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do or just want to say hi? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com or ping me on Twitter at @offbeatoregon or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Also, do let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and an inclination to talk about Oregon history. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way around 6 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you're looking forward to the next one, well, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.